my friends and brethren in these great affairs. I must acquaint you that I have received new dated letters from Northumberland. Their cold intent, tenor, and substance thus. Here doth he wish his person with such powers as might hold sortance with his quality, the which he could not levy. Whereupon he is retired to ripe his growing fortunes to Scotland, and concludes in hearty prayers that your attempts may overlive the hazard and fearful meeting of their opposite.
Thus do the hopes we have in them touch ground and dash themselves to pieces.
Now what news?
West of this forest, scarcely off a mile, in goodly form come on the enemy, and by the ground they hide. I judge their number in or near the rate of 30,000.
The just proportion that we gave them out. Let us sway on and face them in the field.
Health and fair greeting from our general, the Prince Lord John and Duke of Lancaster.
Say on, my Lord of Westmoreland, in peace, what doth concern your coming?
Then, my lord, and to your grace do I in chief address the substance of my speech. You, Lord Archbishop, wherefore do you so ill translate yourself out of the speech of peace which bears such grace into the harsh and boisterous tongue of war, turning your books to graves, your ink to blood, your pens to lances, and your tongue divine to a loud trumpet and a point of war?
Wherefore do I this? So the question stands. Briefly, to this end. We are all diseased, and with our surfeiting and wanton hours have brought ourselves into a burning fever, and we must bleed for it. Of which disease our late king, Richard, being infected, died. I have, in equal balance, justly weighed what wrongs our arms may do, what wrongs we suffer, and find our griefs heavier than our offenses. We see which way the stream of time doth run, and are enforced from our most quiet there by the rough torrent of occasion. And have the summary of all our griefs when time shall serve to show in articles which long ere this we offered to the king and might by no suit gain our audience when we are wronged and would unfold our griefs. We are denied access unto his person, even by those men that most have done us wrong.
Well, never yet was your appeal denied. Wherein have you been galled by the king? What peer hath been suborned to grate on you, that you should seal this lawless, bloody book of forged rebellion with a seal divine and consecrate commotion's bitter edge?
My brother general, the Commonwealth, I make my quarrel in particular.
There is no need of any such redress, or if there were, it not belongs to you.
Why not to him in part? And to us all that feel the bruises of the days before and suffer the conditions of these times to lay a heavy and unequal hand upon our honors?
Oh, my good Lord Mowbray, construe the times to their necessities, and you shall see indeed it is the time and not the king that doth your injuries. But this is mere digression from my purpose. Here come I from our princely general to know your griefs, to tell you from his grace that he will give you audience, and wherein it shall appear that your demands are just, you shall enjoy them. Everything set off that might so much as think you enemies.
Then take, my Lord of Westmoreland, this schedule, for this contains our general grievances.
This will I show the general. Please you, lords, in sight of both our battles we may meet, and either end in peace, which God so frame, or to the place of difference call the swords, which must decide it.
My lord, we will do so.
There is a thing within my bosom tells me that no conditions of our peace can stand.
Oh, fear you not that. If we can make our peace upon such large terms, and so absolute as our conditions shall consist upon, our peace shall stand as firm as rocky mountains.
Yea. But our valuation shall be such that every slight and false derived cause, yea, every idle, nice, and wanton reason, shall to the king taste of this action. That were our royal faiths martyrs in love, we shall be winnered with so rough a wind that even our corn will seem as light as chaff, and good from bad find no partition.
No, no, my lord. Note this. The king is weary of dainty and such picking grievances. But he hath found to end one doubt by death revives two greater in the heirs of life.
Besides, the king hath wasted all his rods on late offenders, that he now doth lack the very instruments of chastisement, so that his power, like to a fangless lion, may offer, but not hold.
It's very true. And therefore be assured, my good lord marshal, if we do now make our atonement well, our peace will, like a broken limb united, grow stronger for the breaking.
Be it so. But here returns my lord of Westmoreland.
The prince is here at hand. Pleaseth your lordship to meet his grace just distance twixt our armies.
Well encountered here, my cousin Mowbray. Good day to you, gentle Lord Archbishop, and so to you, Lord Hastings, and to all. My Lord of York, it better showed with you when that your flock, assembled by the bell, encircled you to hear with reverence your exposition on the holy text, than now to see you here, an iron man, cheering a rout of rebels with your drum, turning the word to sword, and life to death. Oh, who shall believe but you misuse the reverence of your place, employ the countenance and grace of heaven as a false favorite doth his prince's name in deeds dishonorable you have ta'en up under the counterfeited zeal of God, the subjects of his substitute, my father, and both against the peace of heaven and him have here upswarmed them.
Good, my lord of Lancaster, I am not here against your father's peace, but as I told my lord of Westmoreland, the time, misordered, doth in common sense crowd us and crush us to this monstrous form, to hold our safety up. I sent your grace the parcels and particulars of our grief, the which have been, with scorn, shoved from the court, whereon this Hydra son of war is born, whose dangerous eyes may well be charmed to sleep with grants of our most just and right desires.
Pleaseth your grace to answer them directly how far forth you do like their article.
I like them all and do allow them well, and swear here by the honor of my blood. My father's purposes have been mistook, and some about him have too lavishly wrested his meaning and authority. My lord, these griefs shall be with speed redressed. Upon my soul they shall. If this may please you, discharge your powers unto their several counties.
My lord,
as we will ours.
Your grace.
And here, between the armies, let's drink together friendly and embrace, that all their eyes may bear those tokens home of our restored love and amity.
I take your princely word for these redresses.
I give it you, and will maintain my word. And thereupon I drink unto your grace.
Go, Captain, and deliver to the army this news of peace. Let them have pay and part. I know it will well please them. Hie thee, Captain.
To you, my noble lord of Westmoreland.
I pledge your grace. And if you knew what pains I had bestowed to breed this present peace, you would drink freely. But my love to you shall show itself more openly hereafter.
I do not doubt you.
I am glad of it. Health to my lord and gentle cousin Mowbray.
You wish me health in very happy season, for I am on the sudden something ill.
Against ill chances men are ever merry, but heaviness foreruns the good events.
Therefore be merry, cuz, since sudden sorrow serves to say thus, some good thing comes tomorrow.
Believe me, I am passing light in spirit.
The more the worse, if your own rule be true.
The word of peace is rendered. Mark how they shout.
This had been cheerful after victory.
A peace is in the nature of a conquest, for then both parties nobly are subdued, and neither party loser.
Go, my lord, and let our army be discharged too. And good, my lord, so please you, let our trains march by us that we may peruse the men we should have coped with all.
Go, good Lord Hastings, and ere they be dismissed, let them march by.
I trust, lords, we shall lie tonight together. Now, cousin, wherefore stands our army still?
The leaders, having charge from you to stand, will not go off until they hear you speak.
They know their duties.
My lord, our army is dispersed already. Like youthful steers unyoked, they take their courses east, west, north, south. Or like a school broke up, each hurries towards his home and sporting place.
Good tidings, my lord Hastings. For the which I do arrest thee, traitor of high treason. And you, lord Archbishop, and you, lord Mowbray. Capital treason I attach you both.
Is this proceeding just and honorable?
Is your assembly so?
You thus break your faith?
I pawned thee none. I promised you redress of these same grievances whereof you did complain, which by mine honor I will perform with a most Christian care. But for you, rebels, look to taste the due meat for rebellion and such acts as yours. Most shallowly did you these arms commence, fondly brought here and foolishly sent hence. Strike up our drums, pursue the scattered stray. God, and not we, hath safely fought today.
Sir, of what condition are you and of what place?
I am a knight, sir. My name is Colville of the Dale.
Well, Colville is your name, a knight is your degree, and your place the Dale. Colville shall still be your name, a traitor your degree, and the dungeon your place, a place deep enough. So shall you be still Colville of the Dale.
Ah, not you, Sir John Falstaff.
As good a man as ye, sir, whoe'er I am. Do ye yield, sir, or shall I sweat for you?
I think you are Sir John Falstaff, and then that thought yield me.
Ah! Here comes our general. Come,
sir. The heat is past. Follow no further now. Call in the powers, good cousin Westmoreland. Now, Falstaff, where have you been all this while? When everything is ended, then you come. These tardy tricks of yours will, on my life, one time or other, break some gallows back.
I would be sorry, my lord, but it should be thus. I never knew yet, but rebuke and check was the reward of valor. Do you think me a swallow, an arrow, or a bullet? Have I in my old and poor motion the expedition of thought? I have speeded hither with the very extremest inch of possibility, and here, travel-tainted as I am, have in my pure and immaculate valor taken Sir John Colville of the Dale. A most furious knight and valorous enemy. But what of that? He saw me and yielded. That I may justly say with the hook-nosed fellow of Rome, I came, saw, and overcame.
It was more of his courtesy than your deserving.
I know not. Here he is, and here I yield him. And I beseech your grace,
Let it be booked with the rest of this day's deeds. Oh, by the Lord, I'll have it in a particular ballad else with my own picture on the top on't. Colville kissing my foot. Therefore, let me have right and let desert mount.
Mine's too heavy to mount.
Well, let it shine then.
Mine's too thick to shine.
Let it do something, my good lord, that'll do me good, and call it what you will.
Is thy name Colville?
It is, my lord.
Famous rebel art thou, Colville.
And a famous true subject took him.
I am, my lord, as my betters are that led me hither. Had they been ruled by me, you should have won them dearer than you have.
How they sold themselves, I know not, but thou, like a kind fellow, gavest thyself away greatest, and I thank thee for thee.
Send Colville with his confederates to York. To present execution.
Oh.
And now dispatch me toward the court, my lords. I hear the king, my father, is sore sick. Our news shall go before us to his majesty, which cousin you shall bear to comfort him, and we with sober speed will follow you.
My lord, I beseech you give me leave to go through Gloucestershire, and when you come to court, stand, my good lord, in your good report.
Fare you well, Falstaff. I, in my condition, shall better speak of you than you deserve.
I would you had but the wit to a better than your dukedom. Good faith. This same young, sober-blooded boy does not love me. Nor a man cannot make him laugh. That's no marvel. He drinks no wine. There's never none of these demure boys comes to any proof. For thin drink, it does so over-cool their blood. And making many fish meals, did they fall into a kind of male green sickness. And then when they marry, they get wenches. They're generally fools and cowards, which some of us would be too, but for inflammation. A good sherry sack has a twofold operation. It ascends me into the brain. Dries me there, all the foolish and dull and crude vapors which environ it, makes it apprehensive, quick, fugitive, full of nimble, fiery, and delectable shapes, which, delivered o'er to the voice, the tongue, which is the birth, becomes excellent wit. The second property of your excellent sherries is the warming of the blood, which before cold and settled left the liver white and pale, which is the badge of pusillanimity and cowardice. But the sherry warms it, makes it coarse from the inwards to the parts extreme. It illuminates the face, which as a beacon gives warning to all the rest of this little kingdom, man to arm. And then the vital commoners and the inland petty spirits muster me all to their captain, the heart, who, great and puffed up with his retinue, doth any deed of courage. And this valour comes of sherries, so that skill in the weapon is nothing without sack, for that sets it a work, and learning, so a mere hoard of gold kept by a devil, till sack commences it and sets it in act and use. Hereof comes it that Prince Harry is valiant. For the thin blood which he did naturally inherit from his father, he hath like lean, sterile and bare land, manured and husbanded and tilled with excellent endeavor of drinking good and good store of fertile sherries, that he's become very hot and valiant. If I had 1,000 sons, the first humane principle I would teach them should be to forswear thin potations and addict themselves to sack.
Captain! Captain! Captain!
The army is discharged all and gone.
Let them go.
No.
I'll through Gloucestershire, and there will I visit Master Robert Shallow, Esquire. I have him already tempering between my finger and my thumb, and shortly will I seal with him. Come! Away!
Our lords, if God doth give successful end to this debate that bleedeth at our doors, we will our youth lead on to higher fields and draw no swords but what are sanctified. Our navy is addressed, our power collected, our substitutes in absence well invested, and everything lies level to our wish. Only we lack a little personal strength, and pause us till these rebels now afoot come underneath the yoke of government.
That both which we doubt not, but your majesty shall soon enjoy.
Humphrey, the son of Gloucester, where is the prince, your brother?
I think he's gone to hunt, my lord, at Windsor.
And how accompanied?
I do not know, my lord.
Is not his brother, Thomas of Clarence, with him?
Oh, no, my good lord, he is in presence here. What would my lord and father?
Nothing but well to thee, Thomas of Clarence. How chance thou art not with the prince, thy brother? He loves thee, and thou dost neglect him, Thomas. Thou hast a better part in his affection than all thy brothers. Cherish it, my boy, and noble offices thou mayst effect of mediation after I am dead, between his greatness and thy other brethren. Therefore omit him not. Blunt not his love, nor lose the good advantage of his grace by seeming cold or careless of his will. For he is gracious, if he be observed. He hath a tear for pity, and a hand open as day for melting charity. Yet notwithstanding being incensed, his flint, as humorous as winter, and as sudden as flaws congealed in the spring of day. His temper, therefore, must be well observed. Chide him for faults, and do it reverently. When you perceive his blood inclined to mirth, but being moody, give him line and scope, till that his passions, like a whale on ground, confound themselves with working. Learn this, Thomas, and thou shalt prove a shelter to thy friends, a hoop of gold to bind thy brothers in, that the united vessel of their blood, mingled with venom of suggestion, as force perforce the age will pour it in, shall never leak, though it do work as strong as aconitum or rash gunpowder.
I shall observe him with all care and love.
Why art thou not at Windsor with him, Thomas?
He is not there today. He dines in London.
And how accompanied? Canst thou tell that?
With Poins and other his continual followers.
Most subject is the fattest soil to weeds. And he, the noble image of my youth, is overspread with them. Therefore my grief stretches itself beyond the hour of death.
The blood weeps from my heart. When I do shape in forms imaginary, the unguided days and rotten times that you shall look upon when I am sleeping with my ancestors. For when his headstrong riot hath no curb, when rage and hot blood are his counselors, when means and lavish manners meet together, oh, with what wings shall his affections fly to fronting peril and oppose decay!
Gracious lord, you look beyond him quite. The prince but studies his companions. Like a strange tongue wherein to learn the language, 'tis necessary that the most immodest words be looked upon and learnt. But which attained, your highness knows, comes to no further use but to be known and hated. So like gross terms, the prince will, in the perfectness of time, cast off his followers. And their memory shall, as a pattern or a measure, live by which his grace must meet the lives of others, turning past evils to advantages.
'Tis seldom when the bee doth leave her comb in the dead carrion.
Who's here?
Westmoreland. Health to my sovereign. And new happiness added to that I am to deliver. Prince John, your son, doth kiss your grace's hand. Mowbray, the bishop's group, Hastings and all, are brought to the correction of your law. There is not now a rebel sword unsheathed, but peace puts forth her olive everywhere.
Oh, Westmoreland, thou art a summer bird, whichever in the haunch of winter sings the lifting up of day.
And there's more news. The Earl Northumberland and the Lord Bardolph, with a great power of English and of Scots, are by the Shreve of Yorkshire overthrown.
And wherefore should these good news make me sick? Will fortune never come with both hands full, but write her fair words still in foulest letters? She either gives a stomach and no food, such are the poor in health, or else a feast and takes away the stomach, such are the rich that have abundance and enjoy it not. I should rejoice now at this happy news. And now my sight fails, and my brain is giddy. Oh, me, come near me. Now I am much ill.
Comfort your majesty.
Oh, my royal father. My sovereign lord, cheer up yourself. Look up.
Be patient, princess. You do know these bits are with his highness very ordinary. Stand from him. Give him air. He'll straight be well. No, no. He cannot long hold out these pangs. The incessant care and labor of his mind hath wrought the mirror that you confine it in so thin that life looks through. It will break out.
This apoplexy will certain be his end.
Softly, pray.
Who saw the Duke of Clarence?
I am here, brother. Full of heaviness.
Now reign within doors and none abroad.
How doth the king?
Exceeding ill.
Heard he the good news yet? Tell it him.
He altered much upon the hearing it.
If he sit with joy, he'll recover without critic.
So much noise, my lords. Good prince, speak low. The king, your father, is disposed to sleep. Let us withdraw into the other room. Your grace to go along with us?
No. I'll sit and watch here by the king. head of the crown lie there upon his pillow, being so troublesome a bedfellow. Oh, polished perturbation, golden care, keeps the ports of slumber open wide to many a watchful night. Sleep with it now. Yet not so sound and half so deeply sweet as he whose brow with homely biggin bound snores out the watch of night. O Majesty, when thou dost pinch thy bearer, thou dost sit like a rich armor worn in heat of day, that scorched with safety. By his gates of breath there lies a downy feather which stirs not. Did he suspire that light and weightless down perforce must move? My gracious lord, my father. This sleep is sound indeed. This is a sleep that from this golden regal hath divorced so many English kings. Thy due from me is tears and heavy sorrows of the blood, which nature, love, and filial tenderness shall. Oh, dear father, pay thee plenteously. My due from thee is this imperial crown. Which is immediate to thy place and blood, derives itself to me. Lo, where it sits, which God shall guard. Put the world's whole strength into one giant arm. It shall not force this lineal honor from me. This from thee will I to mine leave, as 'tis left to me.
What? Lost thy Clarence!
Would your majesty? Affairs, my lord.
Why did you leave me here alone, my lords?
We left the prince, my brother, here, my liege, who undertook to sit and watch by you.
The Prince of Wales? Where is he?
Find him. He is not here.
The door is open. He has gone this way.
He came not through the chamber where we stayed.
Where is the crown?
Who took it from my pillow?
When we withdrew, my lord, we left it there. The prince hath ta'en it hence.
Go seek him out. Is he so hasty that he doth suppose my sleep, my death? Find him, my lord of Warwick. Chide him hither. This part of his conjoins with my disease and helps to end me. See, sons, what things you are. How quickly nature falls into revolt when gold becomes her object. For this, the foolish, over-careful fathers have broke their sleep with thoughts, their brains with care, their bones with industry. For this, they have been thoughtful to invest their sons with arts and martial exercises. When, like the bee, tulling from every flower the virtuous sweets, our thighs with wax, our mouths with honey packed, we bring it to the hive. And like the bees are murdered for our pains. This bitter taste.
But wherefore did he take away the crown? Lo, where he comes. Come hither to me, Harry. Depart the chamber, leave us here alone.
I never thought to hear you speak again.
Thy wish was father, Harry, to that thought. I stay too long by thee. I weary thee. Dost thou so hunger for mine empty chair that thou wilt needs invest thee with my honors before thy hour be ripe? O foolish youth, thou seek'st the greatness that will overwhelm thee. Stay but a little, for my cloud of dignity is held from falling with so weak a wind that it will quickly drop. My day is dim. Thou hast stolen that which after some few hours were thine without offense, and at my death thou hast sealed up my expectation. Thy life did manifest thou lovest me not, and thou wilt have me die assured of it. What, canst thou not forbear me half an hour? Then get thee gone, and dig my grave thyself, and bid the merry bells ring to thine ear that thou art crowned, not that I am dead. Let all the tears that should bedew my hearse be drops of balm to sanctify thy head. Only compound me with forgotten dust. Give that which gave thee life unto the worms. Pluck down my officers. Break my decrees. For now a time is come to mock at form. Harry the Fifth is crowned. Up, vanity. Down, royal state. All you sage counselors, hence. And to the English court, assemble now from every region, apes of idleness. For the fifth, Harry, from curbed license, plucks the muzzle of restraint. And the wild dog shall flesh his tooth on every innocent. O, my poor kingdom, sick with civil blows, when that my care could not withhold thy riots, what wilt thou do when riot is thy care? O, thou wilt be a wilderness again, peopled with wolves, thy old inhabitants.
Oh, pardon me, my liege. But for my tears, the moist impediments unto my speech, I had forestalled this dear and deep rebuke. Ere you with grief had spoken, I had heard the course of it so far. There is your crown. And he that wears the crown immortally long guarded yours. If I affect it, more than as your honor and as your renown, let me no more from this obedience rise, which my most inward, true, and duteous spirit teacheth this prostrate and exterior bending. God witness with me, when I here came in and found no course of breath within your majesty, how cold it struck my heart. If I do feign, oh, let me in my present wildness die. I never lived to show the incredulous world the noble change that I have purposed. Coming to look on you, thinking you dead, and then almost, my liege, to think you were, I spake unto this crown as having sense, and thus upbraided it.
The care on thee depending hath fed upon the body of my father. Therefore, thou best of gold, art worst of gold. Other less fine in carat is more precious, preserving life in medicine potable. But thou, most fine, most honored, most renowned, hast et thy bearer up. Thus, my most royal liege, accusing it, I put it on my head to try with it, as with an enemy that had before my face murdered my father. The quarrel of a true inheritor. But if it did infect my blood with joy, or swell my thoughts to any strain of pride, if any rebel or vain spirit of mine did with the least affection of a welcome give entertainment to the might of it, let God forever keep it from my head, and make me as the poorest vassal is, that doth with awe and terror kneel to it.
O my son, God put it in thy mind to take it hence, that thou mightst win the more thy father's love, pleading so wisely in excuse of it. Come hither, Harry. Sit thou by my bed. And hear, I think, the very latest counsel that ever I shall breathe. God knows, my son, by what bypaths and indirect crooked ways I met this crown. And I myself know well how troublesome it sat upon my head. To thee it shall descend with better quiet, better opinion, better confirmation. For all the soil of the achievement goes with me into the earth. It seemed in me but as an honor snatched with boisterous hand. And I had many living to upbraid my gain of it by their assistances, which daily grew to quarrel and to bloodshed, wounding supposed peace. All these bold fears, thou seest, with peril I have answered. For all my reign hath been but as a scene acting that argument. And now my death changes the mood. For what in me was purchased falls upon thee in a more fairer sort, so thou the garland wear'st successively. Yet though thou standst more sure than I could do, thou art not firm enough, since griefs are green, and all my friends, which thou must make thy friends, have but their stings and teeth newly ta'en out. By whose fell working I was first advanced, and by whose power I well might lodge a fear to be again displaced, which to avoid I cut them off, and had a purpose now to lead out many to the Holy Land, lest rest and lying still might make them look too near unto my state. Therefore, my Harry, be it thy course to busy giddy minds with foreign quarrels, that action henceborn out may waste the memory of the former days. More would I, but my lungs are wasted so that strength of speech is utterly denied me. How I came by the crown, oh God forgive, and grant it may with thee in true peace live.
My gracious liege, you won it, wore it, kept it, gave it me. Then plain and right must my possession be, which I, with more than with a common pain, against all the world, will rightfully maintain.
Doth any name particular belong unto the lodging where I first did swoon?
'Tis called Jerusalem, my noble lord.
Ah! Lord, be to God. Even there my life must end. It hath been prophesied to me many years I should not die but in Jerusalem, which vainly I supposed the Holy Land. But bear me to that chamber. There I'll lie. In that Jerusalem shall Harry die.